The Rush Hour Catch-Up for Honda. Let's help you into a Honda today. For the school pickup. For the early run home. For the still stuck at work. Welcome. This is The Rush Hour with Lisa and Pete. Perth's Mix 94.5.
Lockie Reed, hello.
Hello, guys. How are you going? Hey, Lise. Yeah. What's going on?
Well, what's going on?
That's what we want to ask you.
Yeah, frantic day yesterday. Quite unbelievable.
This was a really ugly, ugly incident.
Yeah, it certainly was. I mean, look,
of course,
it's the old thing.
We're talking about Gaffey and his hit on Brayshaw yesterday.
Yeah, look, Andrew Gaff, terrific bloke, but put aside the being a terrific bloke, unfortunately, he smacked a bloke in the jaw. It's a young kid. He's just 18 years of age, Andrew Brayshaw, and he's in hospital now. He had surgery overnight and back home today. Just devastating for him. So, unfortunately, Andrew Gaff's going to go to the tribunal tomorrow. It was announced about an hour ago that he'll head to the tribunal tomorrow and he'll cop his whack, and it's going to be a long time out of the game, you'd have to think.
Would you think the rest of the year?
I would think the rest of the year for sure.
Yeah.
I would say if West Coast make it through to the grand final, I think you can pretty much put money on it that Andrew Gaff won't be playing in that grand final. That would be 6 or 7 weeks. Depending on how they go throughout the next month or two, you'd have to say that somewhere between 7-8 weeks would have to be what Andrew Gaff's looking for. Some are even calling for more than that, so it's really hard to judge at the moment.
And especially when you look at other cases, I mean, everyone's talking about the Barry Hall incident, the bug incident. This incident yesterday was nowhere even near being in play or anything like that. Not that that would excuse it. There's nothing to excuse it.
No, there isn't. And look, Tom Bug copped 6 weeks for his hit. Callum Mills, the guy that he hit, played the next week. Didn't really suffer any major injury like a broken jaw. And Barry Hall, of course, we know that. I think he copped 7 weeks. So, look, I think for Andrew Gaff, he'd be looking at somewhere between 7 and 10 weeks. Now, I know that's, you're sort of throwing that up in the air, but it's somewhere around that. It's going to be hard to judge until the AFL Tribunal, until you get a bit of a feel for the AFL Tribunal. I'm tipping 8 weeks would be about the length of time that he'll be out of football.
Lockie, a lot of talk around Gaffey not being with the West Coast Eagles past this season. If he was to get 8 weeks, for example, that is 2 more weeks than what is left of this season if the West Coast Eagles make the grand final. Would a prospective club have to take that into account? Would he not be able to play the first 2 weeks at another club?
That's right. Yeah, he wouldn't be able to play the first 2 weeks. It means he's ruled out for those for 8 games of AFL football, whether it's playing for the West Coast Eagles or another club early next year. The big decision is, look, does Gaffey turn around over the next 2 weeks after he cops his suspension and go, I owe it to the West Coast Eagles now to come back next year? And on the flip side of that, two teams over in the East go, we've just seen this other side, which obviously he's not a bad guy, but we have seen this other side. Do we really want to follow through with the contract talks? It puts everything in a little bit of just a little bit of a talking issue at the moment. But yes, he will have to serve whatever suspension, whether it's with West Coast or the club next year, he has to serve it completely.
There's a lot of talk today too, Lockie, about perhaps criminal charges. I mean, when this happens on a football field, they call it a brain snap. I have no idea what that means. I never will understand that term. If it happens on the street, it's assault.
Yeah. Look, I think we heard earlier today that the commissioner will certainly look into it, but I have the feeling, having spoken to a few people around the family, that the Brayshaw family, that they wouldn't want any police action or anything further aside from it being dealt with in the AFL. I think from that perspective, Mark Brayshaw, who is the father of Andrew Brayshaw, played AFL, VFL football. He's been involved in the administration of AFL and VFL football. He knows football. He's on the Coaches Association as well. He's the head of that. Look, I think he will just leave it to let the tribunal handle it. And I wouldn't think there'd be any further action outside of what the AFL deals out to Andrew Gaff.
Lockie, before we leave you to it, mate, just quickly, tomorrow afternoon, the tribunal, what time are we expecting a decision handed down?
Well, look, it'll start around 3, Pete, and the big question is how long it'll take. You would think if Andrew Gaff goes in and doesn't really argue too much about the incident and what they're charging him with, then it should be a pretty swift tribunal. And by swift, I mean an hour to an hour and a half. if he goes in and there's circumstances that we don't know about at this stage and he wants to fight the charge and try and minimise the damage, then it could drag out several hours. So, look, I would predict anywhere between an hour and a half and 2 hours, unless there's something that we don't know about that Gaffey's going to really fight hard to save himself a long penalty.
I'd put money on a quick one tomorrow afternoon. Yeah. Maybe we'll call on you again tomorrow, Lockie.
I'll be there. Don't worry. You can give me a call anytime, Lise.
It's the Rush Hour with Lisa and Pete.
For Honda, find your kind of value at honda.com.au/offers.
The Rush Hour with Lisa and Pete.
Renee Henry from Nine News joins us now as the search resumes with Australians amongst the missing after 91 have been confirmed killed in Lombok and Bali earthquake. Hello, Renee.
Hello.
Renee, you're in Lombok, are you?
Yeah, I am. We got in about an hour and a half ago and, you know, obviously the big issue is the devastating loss of life. The death toll now at more than 90. But the real issue here is stranded tourists. That the airport is absolutely packed. There are thousands of tourists trying to get off Lombok back to Bali and there are just not enough flights to cater for them. And I've spoken to several people who've been told that it could be 3 or 4 days before they're able to get on a flight to get back to Bali. It's just that booked.
Yeah.
And the other problem is it's the season at the moment. It's the way they call it, the wavy season, where the fast ferries don't run between Lombok and Bali. I'm trying to find out whether there are slow ferries, whether that is an option. But people are just really in limbo at the moment. They're sitting on the airport floor. Many of them slept here last night. They're facing sleeping here again tonight. And that's on top of a really traumatic experience, just hearing the accounts of some of these people when the earthquake struck and then being told that a tsunami was coming and they've had to run up hills, literally run for their lives up hills, stay up on the top of these hills for hours, either sleep up there just with blankets or like sleep down in hotel car parks because their accommodation was too damaged. There's been mass evacuations from the 3 Gili Islands off Lombok. So basically, those islands have just been wiped out. The damage is so bad there. There's no electricity. There's no water. So they've had to do mass evacuations. And you should see the pictures coming out of there. Like, it's just astonishing. Like, people just packing and lining the beaches, trying to get onto boats. I've seen even pictures of people, like, swimming up beside these boats as they're taking off and trying to climb in over the edge.
Oh, wow.
That's how desperate they are to get off. So the people that want to leave, it's either because they're scared or because there's just not accommodation for them because there's just so much damage. Really dire situation.
I'm not surprised they're scared. I've always thought, I mean, I've never been through an earthquake and I've always thought it's really hard to imagine what it would be like when the earth is moving. And they said this lasted a minute.
Yeah, so I was holidaying in Bali when this happened.
Right.
And I've never experienced anything like it. So I just can't imagine what it was like on Lombok itself. So the earth literally shook underneath us for a good minute. We swayed from side to side. We ran out of our villa straight, you know, into the garden, away from the buildings, obviously, and it just swayed, and the swimming pool just gushed from side to side like a washing machine.
When you're saying that, you know, you're obviously there and you're feeling, what are those initial moments, the first few seconds that you start to feel the ground shake like? What's going through your head?
So I've been here a couple of months now, and I have had a couple of tremors while I've been here, but it's just pure, like, my housemate is very like savvy when it comes to this stuff and tsunami. So he yelled, "Earthquake, get out." And so I ran downstairs and just ran outside, and he was scared, and that made me scared, and we just didn't know, like, and it was lasting so long. And you start thinking things like tsunami, you immediately think tsunami, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
He, you know, thankfully he quickly jumped on the net, worked out it was a land-based thing on Lombok, so the risk of tsunami was low for us on Bali. But scary stuff, like the local women next door to us, they were crying out in prayer, you know, obviously asking, you know, for protection or for it to all stop. The kids were crying. If that's what it was like on Bali, I can't imagine what it was like here on Lombok and the Gili Islands, where, you know, they were so close to the epicenter.
And now there have been many, many aftershocks recorded as well.
Yes, the people I've spoken to here say that after they ran for their lives and were waiting on the top of the hill to know whether a tsunami was coming, there was up to 20 aftershocks while they were up on the top of the hill. So, like, that just must have been so traumatic. It was just a scary situation.
And do you have any information on Australians that are missing?
The only one that I know of so far is a Melbourne man has posted about his father potentially missing on Billy Trewangan.
Yeah.
He posted on Facebook that he has not been able to get in touch with him, so he's super concerned. So our crews on the ground in Melbourne are trying to speak to that family and get a bit more information. But the official line from the Australian consulate, from the Australian government, is that to the best of their knowledge, they don't believe any Australians are injured or have been killed in this, thankfully.
All right, Renee, thank you very much. We appreciate your time. Stay safe.
Yeah.
And we'll see more on Nine News tonight.
Thanks, Renee.
You will. Thanks, guys.
It's the Rush Hour with Lisa and Pete.
WA drivers are among the most distracted in the country, with more than one third admitting risky behaviours such as eating takeaway food behind the wheel. Now, there's probably a difference between pinching a few chips out of the bag that you've just bought at the drive-thru on your way home and actually taking your bowl of cereal into the car with you as you're driving to work in the morning.
Mm, this is amazing. It's a survey by online consumer group finder.com.au. WA and Victoria took the most risk, 64% confessing to potentially dangerous behaviours while driving. Those from New South Wales and South Australia were the safest. It was more than 1,800 drivers across Australia. And get this, eating takeaway food, driving in thongs, 37%. Is that really dangerous?
Like, I hate thongs. And I mean, at any time, I think they are
dangerous. Yeah, but as a fashion accessory or for driving?
No, I think they're a dangerous piece of footwear, whether you're walking down the street or whether you're driving. But what I would think would be worse would be driving in stiletto heels.
Yes.
I mean,
yeah.
Some of the shoes I've seen girls step out of their car in.
Yeah.
Obviously, they drove in those unless
how do you
they
do
kick
it?
Them. I can't walk in them, so I don't know how they drive in them. Obviously, the phone features there, but they also cite smoking. I would have thought that that was perhaps the least sort of distracting thing you could be doing because you.
Well,
you,
I think doesn't, like I think it depends.
Maybe
on,
if you've got to you know clamber around in the back seat in your bag to get a cigarette.
Well, also I guess if you're maybe say for example you're driving up the Kwinana Freeway and you know you obviously it might have been a little while since you've had a smoke. So if you're taking a cigarette, maybe you have to light it as well, and you've got to use two hands to do that. So maybe that's the dangerous part.
Well,
of it.
You've obviously never smoked. You don't need two hands to light it. And especially not if you're using the lighter in the car. But another thing that people say is that 12% say they've driven with their knees. Why? What are you doing with your hands?
I'm in that 12%.
Are you? Why? Well, what are you doing?
I was eating
what are
cereal.
Your hands doing?
No,
cereal.
I'm just kidding. No. But I have like, okay, so for example, like here's me. I'm owning up to this,
go
right?
On.
I've done it a couple of times. Mm. And it would be when I've gone through, you know, HJ's, for example, to get myself like a burger or something.
Yeah.
And I'm unwrapping the burger and I'm using.
Oh, you eat the whole burger behind the wheel as well?
Yeah.
See, I would think chips are okay.
No, I've eaten
it. Anything that involves two hands.
Yeah, no, I've eaten a burger behind the wheel. I don't know if I should be owning up to this stuff.
That's messy.
Kat, the producer's in here, she's like, what?
A burger behind the wheel, I still don't think is as bad as a bowl of cereal. Because
you are
actively leaving the house and taking your breakfast with you.
Yeah.
Because you haven't gone through a drive-thru and bought a bowl of cereal with a spoon.
No, that's true.
Everything.
But can I just say, like, with the bowl of cereal, that one blows my mind. Because wouldn't you just put it in, like a mug or something and just drink it? You know, because you can actually do that.
Just have it before you leave home.
Yeah, true. There's
Another thing is putting on makeup. How are people? I mean, I don't even know how. I'd look like I just ran into Tammy Faye Baker if I was putting on makeup in the car. I have a hard enough time in front of the mirror at home, keeping a steady hand.
Now, this is the one that, look, all of those are, what are you doing? But this is the one that really blows me away.
Yes.
Incredibly, 3% of those 1,800 people surveyed owned up to watching a movie while driving. What the hell are you doing watching a movie while driving? Now, don't get me wrong. I know, like, when I was in my 20s,
not more than 15 k's an hour.
I had a VES pack ute, and I had quite a nice sound system, and it included a DVD player, right? But this DVD player would shut itself off and would not let you actually touch it until you were parked.
Fair enough.
And the car was virtually, like, what
it's
are you
distracting
doing?
Distracting enough when kids are watching a movie in the car in front of you and you're driving along. 7% have changed their clothes while they're driving. What? That's just exhibitionism.
That is insane.
With you from 3pm weekdays, it's The Rush Hour with Lisa and Pete on Perth's Mix 94.5. The Rush Hour catch-up for Honda. Let's help you into a Honda today.